Hey, I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer, and you're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Most states in the nation fund their libraries, at least in part, through money collected and distributed at the state level. But that's not the way it works in Vermont. We have the most libraries per capita in the nation, but they are not financially supported in any uniform way. And in tight budget times, funding the local library could be seen as a slashable expense. Today on the program, we're going to look at how libraries stay afloat, as well as what they do in Vermont. Jessamine West is a librarian and writer who lives in Randolph and is a fellow at Harvard Law School Law School's Library Innovation Lab. We don't have Jessamine yet. Let me go to our other guest who happily is in the studio with us. Mary Danko is director of the Fletcher Free Library in Burlington. Mary, it's nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So can you give us a little bit of what you know of the landscape of libraries in Vermont and how they are funded? Because, as I said, it's not uniform, but a lot of libraries get their funding from their towns. What do you know about how it works?
Correct. So many times they're folded right into the town budget. But we do have some libraries in Vermont that are incorporated libraries, so they're separate 501c3s, and then they might go to the town to ask for a certain amount at town meeting time.
How does it work at Fletcher Free Library?
We're actually city-supported, and we're fortunate. We actually have a special half-cent tax to give us our money for our collection. But we are very fortunate. The Fletcher Free Library has had a history of strong support from the city of Burlington, and I think it's because the residents recognize it's a valuable resource and an economical one at that, too.
Well, it's kind of a fixture in Burlington. It's a big building. It's got a lot of resources inside of it, and a lovely place to sit out on the lawn if you're so inclined. So it really feels like a part of the community, at least as I see it as an outsider. Is that how it feels as an insider, a Burlington insider and a Fletcher Free insider?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say all libraries are like, they're three things. They're the building part, you know, where we house our collection. But now we also have the online collection that we do as well, which is downloadable audiobooks, ebooks, maybe databases, that type of thing. And then we have another piece that we do, which is outreach. So we get out of our buildings and we go to preschools and we go to senior centers. We go to farmers markets. We're in parades and we get out in all three ways.
This gives me a chance to correctly say your title now, Jessamine. Jessamine West is a librarian and writer who lives in Randolph and is a fellow at Harvard Law School's Library Innovation Lab, and she is with us now. Hi, Jessamine.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Thank you for joining us. So Mary Danko gave us the landscape for, you know, how libraries are funded in Vermont and how the Fletcher Free Library in Burlington works and the city tax that's actually associated with the library to help give the library some funding. Can you give us the 30,000-foot view of library funding beyond Vermont? Is there a typical way that libraries are funded in this country?
Yes and no. I mean, basically, it's very state by state. So Vermont is one of the states, one of the eight states, I believe, that doesn't receive sort of federal funding that goes directly to individual libraries from the federal government. So each library in Vermont receives their money in a different way. Other states have consortial systems, maybe. So like the state is chopped up into, you know, 5, 6, 10 regions. Libraries in those regions fund kind of a group that helps them with IT and purchasing and whatever. Different states have stronger and weaker state libraries that may be more in charge of that process or not. And a lot of that really will trickle down to sort of the individual libraries. You don't notice it as much from big cities where people are just kind of used to, you know, throwing tax money at stuff, depending on that state, again. But especially in rural areas, the difference in how libraries get funded, you know, rural areas in states that receive federal funding usually at least receive some money, whereas if you're in a state that doesn't receive federal funding, you know, we have small libraries in Vermont that really have to kind of get up at town meeting every year and say, you know, we need a little bit more money because we want to buy a couple more books or something like that. And it's a very sort of individual thing. So at a state level, It varies. There's usually a couple models, the consortial model, the big, strong state library model, the very individualized model. Vermont's unusual in that it doesn't have any sort of consortial, formal consortial system, meaning libraries working together with other libraries, maybe regionally or whatever. We have an informal consortial system, Green Mountain Library Consortium, which is amazing. And it's statewide, which is interesting. You usually don't get that. Those are usually regional. And it helps libraries with stuff like having online catalogs, group purchasing of, you know, language learning, online audio books, that kind of thing. So it varies. There's a couple major models, and all of them are sort of nervous, I guess, with what's been going on in libraries nationally.
Mary Danko, what do you see as the pros and cons of this non-model that Vermont has of having libraries and communities really be able to do it however they want?
Well, I mean, I would say the pro is that you can reflect your community, right? But the con is that we are stronger when we can share resources. I mean, that's what we're about. So when we can all get together, you know, like Jessamyn was saying, as part of the Green Mountain Library Consortium, which we, you know, put together, it just makes a lot more sense. And little tiny libraries who couldn't have power, you know, with vendors in different ways could now do that. So even applying for grants, if we can all group together and apply for a federal grant, it makes a lot more sense.
Can you not do that even if the funding is at the local level? Is there not a way to have a stronger consortium?
I can speak to that a little bit. Yep. Partly it's a money issue.
Yep.
I think for a lot of people, they're not really aware that the smaller libraries in the state are sometimes open 14, 16, 18 hours a week. And so when you have something like preparing a giant grant, it's easy to write in other smaller libraries if you're a larger library. But there's actually a certain amount of work that just needs to happen, putting the paperwork together, assembling the statistics. The state can really help with that, which is terrific. And if you've got 14 hours a week to serve your community, you may spend a lot of that time trying to run programming, having a story hour, buying books, and doing that kind of stuff. So you wind up really narrowing the scope of what you can do. And sometimes once you've narrowed it, it's a lot harder to expand it back to look to the bigger picture of getting more money, because you're just really kind of hustling to keep the lights on.
And to kind of expound on that a little bit, we're constantly being stretched to do more and more and more. Like you just referenced it, you know, if you're at the library, go down the internet. Libraries not that long ago didn't have public computer stations. Now we're expected to have those. We provide printing services. We provide technology support for people. Not only are we buying a book anymore, we're buying an ebook, we're buying an audiobook, we're buying a downloadable audiobook, we're buying a large print book. So with the same budgets that some of us have had for many years, we're being stretched and asked to do more and more and more.
And not that that's not delightful.
Right, exactly.
I think that we should also sort of stress that. Librarians love doing this work, but it's all real work. And, you know, a lot of the tiny libraries I know, you know, the tiniest one I visited lately on the way back from the Vermont Library Conference, literally it's a library, it's got an apartment in the back. One of the women who works there is a volunteer. She lives in the apartment. The money that she pays for rent at the apartment goes for the operating expenses of the library, which are basically buying a handful of books, paying fire insurance to a building that the town owns, and keeping the lights on, you know, paying that small amount of bills. And she loves the job, but they can almost not even afford a librarian who gets paid. And so I think a lot of people, if they go to bigger libraries, like, you know, the one in Burlington, like the one even, you know, in Woodstock, like the one in Shelburne, like the one in St. Jay or whatever, may not really understand these tiny libraries, because there's not that many people who go to it, and there's not that many people who can tell that library story on the larger sort of stage so that people understand the challenges they're facing, in addition to the kinds of challenges that Mary's facing in her library.
We got a note from Ray who says public libraries can provide people with much needed access, not only to books, but also internet access, resources through the Vermont Online Library via the Department of Libraries, and programs and activities for both kids and adults. Ray really echoing what Mary, you were just talking about. It goes on to say annual per capita funding may only be a couple dozen dollars, and that seems like a pretty good deal to me. But I know of a local library that has not been able to operate in the winter for several years now because there's no funding for heating the building in the wintertime. At some point, do we reach a point where we say, much like many discussions that are happening about small rural communities, that maybe some communities shouldn't have or just can't have a library, that, you know, the small number of books they may have and the funding sources, that it's just not something that a community can actually support financially, given all of the various things that communities are supposed to support? Mary, what do you think? You're staring very hard at me.
Well, libraries are an investment. There's just no getting around it. You know, how much does it cost to buy a book? It's so economical when we can share books in our community, when we can share resources. I mean, I know people that don't buy printers anymore because they're like, I'm just going to go run down to the library and use the printer there. I mean, that's amazing. And, you know, this reflects the philosophy of a community. You know, a library represents, are you an intellectual community? Are you a curious community? Do you believe in lifelong learning? And that's what your community members are going to see, and those are the ones that are going to come back, you know?
But if, as Jessamine was pointing out, and as our listener Ray is, that, you know, some libraries are only open a few hours a week, so they're not accessible to everybody at perhaps the times that they are able to go to the library, or they're not even open in the wintertime, is that actually fostering that sense of community and that sense of lifelong learning?
Those libraries have websites, which is one of the things that's been kind of excellent. Like, theoretically, I think the building part of the library is really important, but the sort of, I don't know, engagement part of the library, like, you may have a librarian who can go to community events even when the library's not open. You may have a community of friends of the library that can chop wood to heat a library in the wintertime. So it kind of depends. I think one of the problems is just looking at sort of community cohesion generally, which is something I think a lot of people are concerned about at, like, a national level. I mean, we've definitely seen rural communities in other states where they're like, we feel like we need to choose between the police and the library, and I guess the library loses. But Vermont's got more libraries per capita than any other state. I mean, it's kind of a joke because we don't have a lot of capita.
Right. We rank high in all the per capita.
Exactly. But part of that is because communities find a way if it becomes important to them. And, you know, the old truism is, if you think education's expensive, try ignorance. But a lot of libraries meet the communities where you are, where they are. So maybe you don't need to sit around somewhere and read a bunch of books, but maybe you do want to use the internet. Maybe you want to charge your device. Maybe you want to print a boarding pass. Maybe you want to take a class on how to use a handsaw, or maybe you want to borrow a lawnmower. You guys lend lawnmowers, right, Mary?
We lend gardening tools, not lawnmowers yet.
Oh, I am sorry.
But there are there are libraries that, you know, that loan fishing poles, microscopes, telescopes, snowshoes, all those kinds of things. Again, responding to what the community needs, you know. Even the libraries that are only open a few hours, I would bet that the value that those folks are getting on the return on their investment is 8-10 times what they've put into it. We have people at all these libraries that come to the library every day it's open to read the paper. And a lot of times it's the place of the community, where the community gets together. Neighbors don't see each other and they live on the same street, but they see each other in the library and they start talking about the skunk that's been hanging around the neighborhood. I mean, these are the kinds of interactions that we see at the library all the time. At one of the libraries I used to work at, our state legislature later would come to the library, and that's where she would interact with the community.
Have her, like, listening hours.
Yeah. It was very informal. She came to read the paper too.
And you have to think about what other public spaces are there in your community. In small communities, sometimes you got a town hall. Sometimes there's a church, which is nominally open for everybody, but I think a lot of people don't necessarily feel like it's theirs. But the library is a public space, you know, like a public park. It's accessible, meaning anybody can sort of get into it. It has a door you can get through. It has a way that you can use it. And it's for every single person in the community equally, which I think has a very specific kind of value that we don't see as much with, you know, corporations and businesses that are trying to do similar things to what the library does, except maybe the inclusion part or the accessibility part or the work for everybody part.
And I will say this, too. I mean, sometimes the building is an important place. When it's cold out, it's a place of warmth. When it's really hot out, for some people, it's a cooling center. And we've in the history of libraries, there have been times in recent history, I should say, where the library has been a place of safety and security. During the Katrina hurricane, libraries were the ones that stepped up and said, come on in. Here's a safe place for you to be. Here's internet connection. You can contact your relatives.
You can contact FEMA because maybe your phone's down and you need to fill out a form online to start getting your life back together.
Both Baltimore and Ferguson opened their doors in times when the city was under terrible unrest and said, this is a safe place. Come on in. And they had great discussions, and the library was a place of civil discourse for those communities to talk about things and to heal.
Let's take a break here. We're talking about libraries, library funding. We're talking about how libraries operate in your community. And Mary Danko and Jessamine West have been making the case for libraries, why they're important to fund, why they're important to have in your community. Jessamine West is a librarian and writer who lives in Randolph and is a fellow at Harvard Law School's Library Innovation Lab. Jessamine, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're talking about libraries today and how they're supported with Mary Danko, director of the Fletcher Free Library in Burlington. Separate from our local public libraries is the State Department of Libraries. The department provides resources to legislators and the public. You can kind of think about the model of the Library of Congress and how that operates at the federal level. And the department also works to support libraries with consulting on specific services they offer the public. Randall Smathers, director of the Rutland Free Library, says not having a full shared state library system like Massachusetts puts Vermont libraries in a precarious financial position of relying on municipal budgets year to year. That said, I'd like to put a word in for the work done by the state library. Their new courier system and the Catamount Consortium they helped build have made it possible for our users to easily access not only our materials, but those from other libraries in the state. This despite a massive budget cut to their department a few years ago. Yesterday, I talked with the state librarian, Scott Murphy, and got his thoughts on how public libraries in Vermont are doing. Murphy's only been on the job for about 2 months, but his observation so far is that Vermont's local libraries are really healthy.
Yeah, I think the support locally is fantastic. I think we're really healthy. I mean, we have libraries of all shapes and sizes, and I think that's fantastic. The organizations learn from each other, and I find that absolutely incredible. So, yeah, I'm really impressed with the health of our libraries.
You mentioned that you're impressed by the local support that our libraries have, and that is one of the areas of tension for some people, is that there is not significant state funding for local libraries, which there is in some other states. How concerned are you about funding sources and equalized access across all communities for local libraries?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm concerned about that, definitely. I mean, it's definitely something we need to watch and be careful of. But at the same time, I think there are funding resources out there. You know, state funding is great. And I come from a state where we had full state funding in South Carolina and in Ohio. Both states had it. And it does help to push innovation in libraries, but I don't really see that being a problem in Vermont. Would I like to have state funding? Of course, but I think libraries are really, really well positioned, and we're really doing a good job of moving library services forward here in the state of Vermont.
But, of course, he cautions that funding is a constant concern, and funding from town government really isn't enough.
I mean, I would suggest diversification, even if you do have really strong municipal funding. I mean, as a library director, you absolutely have to be looking at that. You know, you never know when the well is going to dry up. So you always have to be looking for that. And I would say diversifying through foundation support, through Friends of the Library support, through grant support. But again, all of that takes time out of a director's day, and we have to be cognizant of that. And I think the communities have to be aware of that as well. that your librarian, if you want them to be finding those other sources of income, then they actually have to spend time doing that, and they should be paid for that. So I think that's an important factor as well. You know, we have libraries in really, really small towns, and if you think about the population of the town and then you just multiply and do some simple math, you can figure out how much that they, you know, you can afford for your library. Some towns, what do? Do they pull something from the schools and say, okay, do we need to merge some of these library systems? I don't know. I mean, that's certainly allowed within our statutes, but those are conversations that need to be happening on the local level, I think.
That was State Librarian Scott Murphy, and he just mentioned the dilemma of how much time the head of a library should be spending on fundraising and revenue. And for a specific look at that question, we turn now to Betsy Blakey, Executive Director of the Manchester Community Library. Betsy, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you are Executive Director of the library, but you are not a librarian. Can you talk a little bit about why that's a management structure that Manchester chose?
Sure. I think for, you know, we had the wonderful opportunity to create a library from scratch when we moved from the historic Mark Skinner Library that had been here for over a decade to building the new Manchester Community Library. So in that transition from a very historic, quaint library to the library that we have now, which is much more akin to a community center. It's really the hub, but we feel it's the heart of our community, as are other libraries throughout the state. But it gave us an opportunity to reinvent ourselves, and that included the leadership model. So the board chose an executive director function, and partly because a big part of this position is fundraising, because, you know, we are a hybrid model. We get some funding from our municipal taxes, but the rest we have to raise in other ways. And that diversity is a large part of my job. I have wonderful librarians. You know, our staff is the heart of our organization. And so we have people with that skill set and those competencies, but that's not the role that I play. I have a different role than perhaps a traditional library director may have.
Do you think that's a model that could work for other Vermont communities? I mean, I'm thinking especially of very small communities where, you know, it's difficult not only to fund the library, but to, you know, you have a couple of librarians, you don't necessarily, and perhaps a board. You don't really necessarily have a large management structure. So how do you see this model being able to work where you can really sort of leverage financial support from the community beyond just municipal funds?
Well, I think it's harder in a smaller community. I think that you know, some towns have gotten creative with that role might be played by their board. I think it's hard to carve out that kind of attention and focus from the day-to-day, especially when you're strapped often with other constraints, be it the functionality of your building, the operating hours that you're working under. You know, there are opportunities and challenges that every library in every community faces. So I think that as libraries are evolving, and the roles that they're playing are evolving as well as they reflect the needs of their communities, I think that work will have to be done, but I don't know that every community can have an executive director role. It might not be feasible.
Well, that's Betsy Blakey, who's Executive Director of the Manchester Community Library. Thank you for telling us a little bit about how it works at your library and your vision of, you know, what works and doesn't work for other libraries around the state. I appreciate it, Betsy.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We're talking about library funding and how it works and doesn't work and how different it is among many community libraries around the state. Mary Danko is the director of the Fletcher Free Library in Burlington, and she's here in the studio with me. Mary, how much of your time is spent on thinking about things like fundraising, given that you do have this extra special tax that the Fletcher Free Library gets from Burlington residents?
Right. That's for our collection. And then we also have our operating budget, which is, you know, the regular department within the city. I mean, I would say most of my time is spent thinking about the budget. And then you're always thinking again about growing the library. What's the strategy for the library? And I think this public-private split is something that all of us librarians deal with. And in different towns in Vermont, some of us have friends groups that do immense fundraising for the libraries to supplement. And some of the libraries have foundations. Some of them have both. Some of them utilize both of those when they're doing capital improvement projects. But at the heart of it, you do want to have that public support because it is for everybody. It's a great thing when anybody in the community can walk into the library and say, I contributed to this. This is here for me, just as it is for anybody in the community. And sometimes in your life, you might use the library a lot. And then there might be times when you don't use it. And then there might be times when you really need it a lot. And then there's times when other community members you see in your, you know, in your life need it because they've had bad luck and they need to go to the library to apply for jobs, to learn how to, you know, fill out a resume, to do the training for the job once they get the job because they can't afford a computer or the internet at that time. It also, we've got to think about when we inform our citizens, we have an informed democracy. And that's what we want. And that should be a public contribution that we're all making.
We're getting comments and thoughts from people around the region rolling in. Anita is with the Friends of the Wardsboro Library, and she says, keep in mind that many of Vermont's libraries are in very old buildings that gobble up a lot of money for upkeep, as historic buildings do. In Wardsboro, ours dates to the mid-1800s in an old farmhouse and attached barn. And let's go to Bob calling in from Enosburg. Hi, Bob. Go right ahead.
Well, howdy. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I did want to reiterate from a citizen standpoint, because your guests have been mentioning it, but libraries are expanding much more out as community centers around Vermont with activities that draw in large sections of the community. Many of the libraries up here in Franklin County are doing learning gardens, bringing in kids and during the summer, being involved in that, as well as in fall, there's tractor days where farmers bring their tractors in, where kids can climb on them and meet other people in the community. So the aspects of that, I think, are real dynamic, and especially in small towns, that is a huge help to help build community where many of otherwise people are commuting away. And
yeah.
The other comment I want to make, since Scott was on, that the interlibrary loan system, there are aspects that the state can overlook that have really helped that can't really be done at an individual library level. And they've expanded the interlibrary loan system with Green Mountain Messenger Service to make it much easier for me, who I'm always reading a couple books at a time, to be expanding beyond just what my library is offering.
Bob, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate that and that idea of how libraries can come together, because obviously, you know, not every library is going to have every book. Thank you for sharing that. At my library, we haven't had a tractor day that I know of, but we did have Come Meet a Llama. So we had llama at the library. Let's go to Molly, who's calling in from Jericho. Hi, Molly. Go ahead.
Hi. My biggest concern, I understand the challenge with funding, but my biggest concern about closing libraries in smaller communities and rural communities is that the chasm between the have and have-nots is going to get larger and larger. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of children who don't have books in their own home, and their access to books is through libraries, and their access to programs is through libraries, and adults as well. So I feel like it's imperative that we figure out a way to fund libraries in smaller communities.
Molly, thanks for your comment. I appreciate that. Let's get a couple more thoughts in here. Harry is calling in from Cornish, New Hampshire. Hi, Harry. Your thoughts?
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yep, we gotcha.
Oh, great. Yeah, I just wanted to share my enthusiasm with libraries. I'm a cartoonist, and I grew up and I illustrate children's books, but most of my childhood was spent in libraries. And when my son was very young in Nyack, New York, I took him to that library every single day. And literally, I would say, as an adolescent, libraries saved my life. In fact, someday I want to be buried under a library. I don't know if you can work that out. But the other thing I wanted to throw out there, in terms of fundraising, I just donated my services, and I'll offer this up there just for libraries. We did a fundraiser for Opera North, in which we raised $1,000. I, in a cartoon, I was the highest bidder. I got to put their pet in one of my cartoons. So you can immortalize your pet by having it in maybe a New Yorker cartoon. And then the highest bidder, you know, donated that money to Opera North. And but the library could, you know, we could do something like that, which would be a lot of fun and would raise some funds for it. But I offer that out there because I love librarians and I adore libraries. So,
well, Harry, thanks God for your bless. Comment. And Harry just offered his services. I believe that's Harry Bliss. So, you know, libraries out there looking for a fundraiser. There's Harry. He's a library fan. You know, one of the things that we talk about here is how libraries operate. Deborah says, I live in an area with a string of very small towns. Each has a library and one at the schools in the town. Why can't schools and libraries work together to pool resources and buildings and operating hours? Let's get another call in here from Duncan, and then Mary Danko, I'll give you the last words. Hi, Duncan. Go right ahead.
I'm calling to let librarians know about the Children's Literacy Foundation. It's a nonprofit that's been helping rural libraries and many other organizations across Vermont, New Hampshire for almost 20 years. We've worked with about 85% of all the rural libraries in New Hampshire and Vermont in towns with fewer than 5,000 people. And they are really the beating heart of a small community. In many towns, that's really the only community gathering place. And a lot of those libraries have annual book budgets for all the kids in town of $250 or $500. And if they apply to our nonprofit, the Children's Literacy Foundation, they could get a grant of $2,000 in brand new books for the public library, $500 in books for the local school, because we connect the school and the library, two professional storytelling events from professional authors and illustrators, a program grant for the library. And then the last thing I'll mention is the Children's Literacy Foundation also offers regular conferences. And this September 15th, Friday, September 15th in White River Junction, we're holding our latest Cliff Rural Library Conference. We expect to have 130 rural librarians from all across New Hampshire and Vermont. It can be kind of a lonely job in your small town, and this is a way for all of them to get together and share ideas. And we love to support rural libraries, and we'd love anyone to apply for our free grants or to come to our conference. And they can visit our website at cliffonline.org, CLIF.online.org. And I think Mary Danko has been a panelist at one of our conferences.
I have.
Duncan, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. You know, hearing now a lot of different ways that there are resources out there in the communities for libraries. And Mary Danko, I'd love to give you your final thoughts here as we think about library funding in this state.
Well, your callers brought up so much, the programming piece, and if I had the whole show, I could talk about early literacy and the investment that we make into our young kids and the importance that libraries play in that. You know, the research is immense. And I also just want to say to all the librarians out there, they are the people resource in your town, and they are going to get you the answers to the questions that Google can't answer for you. They are connected. They are networked. They're going to get you that book. They're going to get you the answer. And you know what else? They're going to fight for your freedom to read whatever you want. They're going to fight against censorship. They're going to make sure people have access. You talked a little bit about net neutrality. Librarians are on that train too. We're not going to let that happen under our watch. Sometimes we're quiet and a little introverted, but we are feisty. there's a lot that we do as librarians, and Vermont librarians are the best. They're really great. We're all super networked, and we're all about helping our communities.
Plug there for the librarians. Mary Danko is director of the Fletcher Free Library in Burlington. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Jane.